Welcome to First Post Masterclass, our brand new podcast series where elite athletes break down their craft for you. My name is Anish Anand and joining me in this episode is former Northeast United and Kerala Blasters head coach Elko Shatori. He has been on the coaching and management side of football for close to 25 years, right from overseeing the youth development sides to managing senior teams in India, Saudi Arabia and Oman. Elko Shatori has a wealth of experience when it comes to football management. In this episode, he gives rare insights into the mind of a football manager. He speaks about his methods, the decision-making process, the importance of youth development, dealing with stress, and many more things.
So what has been your biggest learning in football management?
If you look at coaching, I think coaching is a experienced job. I mean, you can compare it with wine. A good wine aging over time gets better. That doesn't mean that when you coach, that an older coach is always better than a younger coach. That's not what I mean. But I do think that if you start on an early age, it doesn't matter on which age you start, but over time, if you analyze yourself, the situation that you get into and you evaluate them well, you will become a better coach. Now, having said that, I do think that a lot of coaches over-organize. I learned more over time to let go a little bit more and see the bigger picture of things.
Okay.
That means you don't want to overstructure, overthink things, and put all the time all your ideas on players. I try always to create a team that basically starts thinking for themselves, and I try to, on the left, on the right, small things, try to adjust. But I like it when players learn how to take their own decisions, and I try to guide them through it rather than telling them at all moments what to do. Does that make sense a little bit, what I'm saying?
Yes, sir. Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah, that brings me to the next question as well. So how much of, when you coach a team at the highest level, how much of it is actually coaching the players and how much of it is actually managing them, management and stuff? I ask this especially taking the Indian football into scenario. And since you worked with Indian clubs, does coaching players took a lot of your time in India?
All right. Basically, I think football is divided for me in three areas. One is what is football? Football is a very subjective sport. So the way you see football is completely different for people. Some they like the long ball strategy. Some like the build up game. So, but the way you look at football is very important. So the moment you step into a club, and especially in Asia, and I will make it specifically to India, there will be people who are running the club who never played football in their life. So for those people, the way they see football is completely, most of the time, completely different than the coach does. Now, that means the moment you get into a club, you need to have some kind of a merging of ideas, or basically maybe people in that club give you the full responsibility of a leading club and going to the whole football process of a team. But sooner or later, they always get impatient because the results maybe are not there, or they don't understand that football is a process, that it takes long time to build a team. That's first of all the biggest challenge, especially in Asia. But we're talking here about India, because India doesn't have a football culture, and I mean as in like a long football culture. Right. So people, especially who lead a club, not always see that. That is one. Two, the second part, how I see football is there are a lot of forces. I call it the forces in football. There are a lot of forces around a team. There are a lot of parties involved that have influence on a club, on a team, but you don't right away see them. And I will try to explain it as follows.
Yeah.
The only party that has direct influence on a football match are the players. So football players have a direct influence. Then comes the coach, then comes the staff. Those three, in my opinion, have direct influence on what they on the influence on the game. But then you get a layer, you get a few layers of influence who don't directly influence the game, but they do influence the process. That means that's the club management. These are the sponsors or the stakeholders.
Right.
Then, for instance, then you get the supporters, you get the press, you get even the referee, the opponent, the local politics. All of these parties, they do have influence on your process.
Yeah.
And that the coach or players depend on. So, what does that mean? That on a football club, on a football team, are a lot of parties involved that have influence, but not always can understand that their position or their influence has impact. And I will make it a little bit more specific.
Yeah.
Especially when because last year I was at Kerala Blasters.
Yeah.
Kerala Blasters is one of the teams who has the biggest fan base in India.
Right.
Those supporters, they have a huge demand or huge expectation of how the team should play. And of course, they want the team to win, but they have an expectation. So as a club, if you don't communicate, communicate the process that you're working on to those supporters, those expectations can put a huge pressure on players, can put a huge pressure on the coach. And therefore, you can start making different decisions because they expect right away the result. So the point what I want to make is, yeah, and that is in many, many clubs, is the forces that outside the team are way stronger than people think. It's the same thing, for instance, local politics. For instance, if the local politics, the environment that you're in, are not football minded, they will not help you much getting a proper facility for training, etc. And that has indirectly again influence on the results of a team. So what I want to say is, first I said, what is football? Secondly, the forces in football, and three, how do you manage football? And managing football is a part, coming back to your question, I spend a lot of time in developing individual players and, of course, the team process. And when it comes to India, the first thing I look at Indian football players, and either you're from India, you're from Africa, you're from Holland, it doesn't matter, everywhere you have talent.
Yeah.
But if you look at Indian culture, you have the caste system. You have people are pretty like an elderly. You listen to somebody who's older. He always knows better. But football is a game that has creativity, and that means players need to learn to make decisions. And that's, as an example, for me something that I try to teach players to be more decisive, be more creative, and not just look to the side or have black and white explain to them what they need to do. Does that make sense what I'm saying?
Yes, sir. Got it. So you have spoken about football, what is football, and merging of ideas, and there are certain aspects where a lot of other surroundings also influence the club and stuff like that. So
yes.
This brings us to the next question. So how, for a football manager, how important is the decision-making process? What is your approach regarding this? Do you like to take as many opinions as possible, or you always stick with your basic instincts?
When I started my career as a coach, you want to do everything yourself. You want to do everything yourself. Nothing is good. You're on top of everything. And the older that I became as a coach, the more I tried to delegate. There are certain areas that I always do myself. For instance, many coaches have an analyst, somebody who analyzes the game. I have one, but he... like for instance to analyze the opponent team before a game and after game, I all do myself.
Okay.
And then over time, if an analyst is working with you a long time, he will start understanding, he will start underseeing what you do. But overall, I like to analyze the opponent team, always myself. I don't like to give that out of hands because somebody else does not see what your eyes see. But when it comes to overall working regarding the players, regarding the staff, etc., I like to delegate and try to keep the main idea of what we're doing and not be on top of everything. So when you make decisions, you sit with your staff, you make a plan, and you start executing the plan. And then along the way, I will try to supervise and keep an eye on how things going. And if there are very important decisions to make, I never am scared of making a decision. That's one of the things I actually learned along the way. I rather make a wrong decision and stand for what I decided, then hesitate and keep going back and forth, and I'm scared to make a decision. So decision making is something very important for a coach. And as long as you stand behind it, I also think players like that. They like that clarity that you show that, hey, this coach, he takes decision, he's not scared to take them. If you're wrong, I'm also the first one to say, okay, I made a mistake there. But at least they see that you are decisive. And over time, you build a third eye or an intuition that you know, okay, this you already anticipate certain problems and you know better how to make those decisions.
All right, sir. For you, how important is the preseason? How do you plan a preseason for a club? Because I've read when you were in charge of Kerala Blaster, the preseason didn't go as per the plan. And if a preseason doesn't go as per the plan, does it impact the rest of the season?
It's extremely, extremely important. I know that the beginning of the league last season, ISL, I remember Mumbai got some injuries also when they played against us. I know that Goa was not really going well, and almost all teams had a preseason inside India. And I think it has to do with costing costs, going back in budget. But to plan a preseason in India is not easy because you don't have an infrastructure where you can play just games whenever you want. So having said that, if we look at my preseason with the Kerala Blasters, we decided way before we started to go to Dubai. I went to Dubai to see the facilities, to see the hotel. We organized the games, although the games we had to wait a little bit before they were decided. But if you plan a preseason, it's all about the physical preparation. That is one. Because why do you have a preseason? To get the players fit. That is the most important thing. You prepare them for the rest of the year. Then the other parts, of course, the tactical preparation, etc. But I will stick now only to the physical preparation. So the moment you plan a physical preparation, the first thing you do is plan the games, because that's the peak moment. That's the moment where players physically get the 100%, 100% exposure of the physicality.
Right.
And once you have planned those games, you work backwards by planning the physical training, because you cannot in a week you do 3 or 4 physical trainings. You have the game, and then you plan one physical overload training. And you cannot do that if you just go week by week and let's see, okay, next week we have this game and let's plan next week there the physical training. You need to plan this up front because it's a gradually upgoing load. So you start easy, you go a little bit heavier, etc. I have a program there. So the moment you plan a preseason and it's cancelled and you have to, we were in Dubai and you have to go back, then you have to start planning that program all over again. And most, as I said, you start with planning those games. Most teams were already occupied. So that's a huge problem. So because our preseason got disrupted, and you have to start planning day by day, you will not get a proper physical exposure to having a gradually planned to get fit. So I had to do my best there to get it as good as possible, but it was a disaster. And you also saw during the season that, yeah, we had a lot of injuries.
Yeah.
And I can, for instance, give you another example. If you plan your preseason really well, but you go too strong and too heavy and make your planning too strong, like you plan too many physical trainings, you can see sometimes in the beginning they are very fit, but later in the season suddenly you start seeing injuries because you started too strong and too heavy. So the picture that you need to paint is this: a season is long. The ISL is not that long, but it's at least a 6 month physical league. Yeah. And those 6 months, you need to stay fit. In order to do that, is a very planned, organized preseason. And if that gets disrupted, you will always sooner or later see problems.
Okay. That was very, very, very detailed, sir. Thank you for that. So when you sign for a new club, or when you are in negotiations with to join a new club, do you always give them a time period for you to complete the job which is required to do in the club? Does this approach always help the football manager, or there's no such pre-plan, there's no such time limit for you to complete the job?
If I look back at my career, let me start with this. As a coach, I think there are a lot of good coaches, but don't have big profiles or don't have won too many championships. Mm-hmm. So what will happen is that sometimes you get into a job halfway the season and you have to take over from another coach. Or because you need to provide for your family, you will have to take a job where you already know up front this is going to be very difficult because this club is not very organized. So anyone who has a profile that is not very, very big, but many, many coaches who don't have big profiles are way better coaches than I will give an example where coaches who were big players before never have too many experience as a coach, but they easily get a job.
Right.
And they are so there's a big pile of coaches who don't have that profile but are very good coaches, but they don't have the choice of just picking a job however they want. So if I look back in my career, there are a lot of coaching jobs that I took, especially in the beginning, that I had to step into a job halfway and taking over from somebody. There were a lot of jobs where I saved many teams from relegations. And that is many times seen as, it's good, great, but it's a very, very difficult job when you have to step in and you have to start building your things while you need to win and you have to take over from another coach. That is not easy. So when you have the chance to start at the beginning of the season, and when you have the position of to present a plan to a club, that is always the best thing to do, because then you have time to recruit together. Then you have to get your fans. But at the same time, for instance, I also worked with a lot of clubs where I always have to work with the staff of the club. That means you prefer to have your own staff around you. So it's not as easy as it looks like. And I am very flexible. That's one of the good things, I think, from my side, is that I learn to work with what I have. But does that always give you a championship? No. But I am 100% sure any club where I ever worked, I made progress. I developed. But sometimes, unfortunately, you don't get the time to really finish it. And if you get a club, a platform where you basically already have good players, where you have a good infrastructure, you also have a bigger chance to win. look at Bengaluru, where the coach, what's his name, Kudwa, he never was a head coach. Yeah, he was never head coach before.
Right.
Never.
Right.
His first job as a head coach was at Bengaluru, but this team already in the last 6 years always is at the top. So if you have a good club with good infrastructure, doesn't mean that Kudwa is a bad coach. Don't get me wrong. What I'm trying to say is that if you step into a situation where you have bigger chance to succeed, yeah, that is always good for a coach, or where you have chances to have certain demands. Does it paint a little bit the picture of your question?
Yes, it does. So we, you know, journalists, pundits, you know, we speak a lot about, you know, footballing philosophies as such, as a style, you know.
Yes.
Do you, as a manager, think that a football team should have an identity? You know, there are examples where, you know, the teams are not known enough to have an identity, but still end up, you know, with trophies as such. But what is your thought on that? Do you think a team should have a particular identity?
If you look at any, I am actually watching now The Last Dance on Netflix.
Oh, it's lovely, sir. It's lovely.
It's fantastic. It's fantastic. If anyone, any coach or anyone who wants to have an idea about top sports and how top sport is structured should look at that documentary, because first of all, the coach, Phil Jackson, I really admire. I read his books and I can see the personality. He's, for instance, somebody who's not a control freak. He actually uses the qualities of the players. He uses the qualities of the characters he has. So he's not like putting an all fit system. What I want to say, he's not sticking to just one system. And when you talk about an identity,
yeah,
he created an identity for that team. But a club who always has the same identity or has no identity, I don't believe in. But there need to be some kind of philosophy, some kind of thinking, general thinking that fits that club and that culture. And the easiest way to explain it to me is if you take Barcelona or Ajax, there is a certain style that fits them. But you don't have you don't have to always have like a very, very specific identity. It's more of a general idea what you want to see from this club. I do think you need to have that because that makes it easier to scout and to find people that fit that culture. Because sometimes if you don't have that identity and you bring in a person from outside, either if it's staff or either if it's a player or even within the management, if they don't have certain elements of the values that you have at that club, yeah, then it will never work. So you need to, I do believe you need to have an identity. And special identities, a specific, either if it's a player, if it's a coach or a team, who stand out, you can always say they have this identity. So yes, I do think it's a very important thing to have or to create.
Right. So you've spoken about, you know, having an identity and, you know, explained it in a way. So just to make it clear, if you are, you know, choosing identity for a team, how much of it has to go with the coach's philosophy, how coach should think that what should work and all, and how much of it should depend on the actual quality of the players? Where does you draw a line? I mean, is it your
that is, to me, very simple. I do think that there are coaches who have their own identity and they go to a club but cannot put that identity on that club. I always believe you need to think different. Think in the big picture. Any country has a certain government and a certain culture that you cannot, if there's a new president coming every time, that we change the culture of the country. That is not possible. That means you get confused. So I do think that a club needs to determine and find their own culture, their own identity, and find a coach who fits that. If you bring in a coach who wants to completely change that, and Mourinho is the best example for that, I don't think that Mourinho in the last 20 years, from when he started till now, that he's a different coach. He still has the same identity and same way of working. But it seems in the last 2-3 jobs, it did not work for him. Mm. So I do. And when the moment he went to Manchester United, I already said it up front, and it's not arrogance. You can see my tweets. You can see in interviews. I said that's not going to succeed. That doesn't mean that Mourinho is not a good coach, but he just doesn't fit the style or the culture of that club. And there are many examples where you can find where you have a really good coach, but he doesn't fit that culture. So it is extremely important to work backwards. So first the club needs to have an identity and do the right recruitment and find a coach that fits with it. Now it could be, and I'm looking for instance at Kerala Blasters, who in my opinion have an identity, but the identity is more outside the club, the supporters. They have a huge, if everyone talks about Kerala, it's always about the supporters. But in the last 6 years, they had 9 coaches. So that means there is something wrong in finding the right person that fits that club, or maybe has the chance to build something, to build an identity for a club. So it always works both ways. And you need to have people with vision and understanding of those dynamics. And I go back again to what I said in the beginning, the forces, the dynamics around the club, you need to know what they are in order to build also a certain identity.
Okay, so the next one might sound a little vague for you, but what is your preferred tactical formation, and you know, why do you like it, or do you have a preferred tactical formation, or is it depends on match to match or changes?
No, I will. Yeah, I will explain it two ways, because I always like to make it as much as understandable as possible. I do also think that is one of my strengths in coaching. If you talk to players, that you try to make what you're saying that they understand it. Now, to go back to the question, a tactic, a formation, is not something static. It's not like when you play a 4-3-3 or a 4-4-2 that you think like, okay, this is. You don't choose a formation and then the players. You have to work the other way around. You look at the quality of the players and then choose a formation. And that formation does not mean that it's always the same way executed than you maybe did it before, because in the end, it depends on the quality of the players. I will give you an example. My first job in India was at Prayag United, where they had one player called Carlos Hernandez. He played in the World Cup for Costa Rica.
Yes.
But when I arrived, I came also halfway the season. He was overweight. He was too heavy. He was not physically fit. So the first 2-3 games, and he wanted to play on the midfield, like in a 4-2-3-1. On the ball, it was fantastic. But defensively, he left so much problems, especially when we went into the second half, that caused problems for the team. So at a certain point, I tried to convince him that he was not fit, and he was first finding excuses for it, but later I could convince him that he wasn't fit. And I changed the system to a 4-4-2 diamond. That means you have a back four line and a diamond shape on the midfield. But I gave Carlos, I gave him a free role as a striker. I had Aranti Martins as the main striker who goes to the box. And I gave Carlos a free role as a striker. He could go wherever he want. Why did I do that? Because defensively he was not fit and not strong. And if you play up front as a striker, you do have to do defensively less work. You do a little bit of pressing or a little bit of pressing forward, and then the players behind you will cover the rest. But at the same time, I wanted to use his qualities on the ball. So I gave him a free roll. He could go wherever he wanted. The only thing I wanted when we lose the ball, that he get as quick as possible to his position, that we have at least a defense organization. And when we start doing that, we won the AFI Shield, and we were unbeaten the rest of the season. So shaping a formation highly depends on the qualities of the players.
Yeah.
And to make it even more understandable, and this is in general life, if you're a single man, and you want to get married, and let's say you date 4 or 5 girls.
Yeah.
You cannot do it with all those 4 or 5 girls the same approach. You need to see what is their character, what do they like, what they don't like. So what I want to say with that is that you need to have an approach, a tactical approach with what you have, with the abilities, the qualities that are available. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir. Yeah. So that's what I was, you know, the next question. Actually, you explained it here really well. So to sum it up, you're saying that a person has to be flexible, a manager has to be flexible enough to change it according to the team and the kind of quality of players the team has, right?
Yes. And when I just told you the way I see football is football, forces in football, and how to manage football. One part of the how to manage football I divide in two areas. One is how to manage people, and the second part is my coaching philosophy. And for instance, how to manage people is situational leadership. One of the part is situational leadership. That means you don't use each situation in the same way. And it's the same thing, using qualities of certain players and their characters and their qualities is not a static thing. It's not you don't approach everyone or every situation the same.
Right, sir. Okay. So exactly. So my next question is about that. You know, developing leaders in your time in your team. So when you are in charge of a team, do you consciously put an effort to develop that kind of leaders inside the team, or it all depends upon the qualities of the players? And if he or she wants to rise up and become a leader of team, then he or she will eventually do that. Or do you make an effort to point it out and, you know, make sure that, you know, this person has an ability to lead the team or not lead as in the leadership qualities?
I think that's a great question, especially when it comes to India. Why? Because Indian people overall, and I mean that really with respect, and I think it's also one of the good things, Indian people are pretty humble. That means very respectful. An elder person is always expected to know everything, and he's the leader. While I think, especially in football, there are examples in Indian football that I can see. You can see many times in a team, a player who is the captain, but I don't think he's a leader.
Yeah.
A leader is some, and he is based on his age, because he's the oldest. But does that mean he's a leader? No, not at all. There will be, but there are also a lot of examples where I say, that is not leadership. Leadership in India many times is seen as the guy who is the oldest, or the guy who works the hardest. Like the guy who is like always putting up a fight and working hard. But does that mean that he can lead the people around him? No. So me as a coach, when I step into a team, that's one of the first thing you try to observe is, do you have players that are an extension in the field for you? Because inside the field, football is very it's a game of a lot of mistakes. Not every situation is the same, so you need somebody in the field who also can take control on many levels,
right?
And that is, you are born with that, so you also try to recruit that. But sometimes you can have very good players, but you have no leadership inside the team. That's a problem. That's a big problem, and that is not something you can create. You really need to recruit that, either a club or a coach. You need to find one or two leaders at least in your team. But what a leadership means does not always is on the same level the way I see leadership. Leadership is really something that is many times only explained as the oldest guy and the guy who works the hardest, but that does not mean he is able to lead people. That is sometimes completely brought out of context.
Okay, right, sir. Sir, let's put you in a situation where, you know, you are managing a team where you have a very good squad and all the bases are covered. But let's say another highly talented player is available and who wants to join your team and the club can afford the transaction. What do you do in this kind of situation? Just to get a brief idea how the coach think, the managers think when it comes to recruitment policies.
Can you repeat the question one more time? Sorry, because I missed the first part.
Yeah, sorry. Yes, sir. Yeah, no problem, sir. I'll repeat. So let's say you have a very good squad, covered in all the areas. You don't need any such, you know, important player as such in any one position, but a highly talented player is available who wants to join the club, who wants to join your club, and the club can afford that kind of transaction money. So what do you do in this kind of situation?
I like it when there is a clear picture of what we are doing. What I prefer is I don't like to work with big groups because basically a team, a football team, is only 11 players can play. And the more, the bigger the group is, you have more people who are not happy than who are happy. So let's say you have a group of 30 people, 30 players, then you have 11 happy people and 19 non-happy. That means you have more people who are not happy. So basically what I try to do is to keep the team as small as possible. I like to have on each position two players. That means normally for keepers you have three keepers, but each position you choose two players who need to compete with each other. So the moment when player A on the right back is not doing well, player B, he knows, okay, I'm getting my chance. So that is the starting point. Now, let's say that you have a really good talented player, but you already have everything set for your team. But this guy wants to play for your team, then I would go sit with this player and would explain to him, being brutally honest about his position, that where he's standing, that if he wants to work his way in, and because we already have on each position two players, that it's not like we take him and he right away gets his chance. Then you need to explain to him what is the trajectory for him to get a chance within this club. And if he feels that is something he wants to invest in, we will take him, or I would like to take him. And if he feels that is something, no, I want to come and right away play, or right away want to get my chance, then I will say sorry. Then I will choose for the club. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir. It does make sense.
And the most important thing is, and many clubs make those mistakes. They see one talented or somebody who played the two fantastic games, and then clubs want this player, and the other clubs they don't want to want to be left out. So they start bidding. They take this player, but they already have for that same position three other players. So there starts to be a disbalance. I see that so many times with clubs scared to miss out on a player and bringing one in, and you have three or four players for the same position. So you will create a problem. So you need to be really clear on what you're doing and what you expect also from the person you're bringing in.
Right, sir. Sticking with players, a bunch of youngsters, you know, are trying to break into the first team. You have a pretty much a good options there. So if you have to pick youngsters, so, you know, I have to promote youngsters from the junior teams to the first team. Is there a process you have? What do you look in those youngsters? Any characters or what goes into your mind while picking the youngsters for the first team?
The first thing that needs to be understood is that if you are a youngster, if you are going from the juniors to the seniors, that's step is physically very big. So that means an 18-year-old boy who is playing in the juniors, but he finishes the juniors and he makes a step to the first team because he's talented. The first thing, there's a big difference between junior football and adult football. So physically, that needs adaptation. So that is one. But any player who, on a technical level, on a physical level, on a tactical level, so the understanding of the game, and on a mental level, also on those four areas, if he shows that he is able to cope with the first team requirements, I will give a chance, and I will put him, even if he's doing better than a 25-year-old, a 30-year-old, I don't care, I will put him. Now, the next thing, and that is part of being young. I have it now. For instance, my son is 13 years old. He's almost 14. Okay. He's a teenager. And what is known for young people is that they are stubborn, impatient, don't like to, many times don't have too much discipline. So yeah. What I want to say with that is that you need to be patient, and you need to, when things, in the beginning, many times things go well, but there will always be a backlash. There will always be a drop in performance in anything. So yeah. Then you need to make them understand, and you need to accept it also, that they're not doing well. In India, for instance, someone who never played football, and then I will say an official who is an owner of a club or whatever, he sees this young player and he played fantastic two games. He said, oh, great. And the third game, very good. And the fourth and the fifth game, he suddenly plays bad. They start asking, why? Why is this? What's happening? He needs to train harder. Why is he not playing good? So the process for young players is being patient and need good guidance. But if from the outside being pushed on that player from, oh, you are so fantastic, you're good, why the coach is not putting you? That's sometimes a problem because they don't understand the ups and downs that the young players go to.
Yeah.
If he's able to cope with that on all levels, if he's showing that he can handle it, he will keep playing and I will put him at any time, no problem.
All right, sir. So how do you view the relationship between players and a manager? Do you think it's essential for a head coach or a manager to have that kind of distance, to be little separated away from the players in order for the team to do well, or in order for you to do your job more objectively? Do you think a distance help? Yeah.
Yeah, I had a very good learning school there. I've also been a long time in the beginning of my career. I was assistant coach.
Yeah.
So assistant coach, you are in between the head coach and the players. Many times players, when they are not happy or when they don't get playing time, what they do, they go to the assistant coach. They don't go straight to the head coach. So they try to get their message across by speaking to the assistant coach. Now, you don't want to fall in bad terms with the players, but you also don't want to, because you need to be loyal to the head coach. So I learned, and I was very young also, by the way, I always learned to be very straightforward. That means I will always say what I think to the head coach and to the players when I was assistant coach. But at the same time, you need to you need to be respectful to them. Now, I forgot the question, by the way, where we went.
So my question was that, you know, that kind of a distance, does it help?
Oh, yes, yes. Yes. So the distance, what I learned over time is two things. One, I'm very straightforward and open. But as a head coach, I always keep a certain distance because I do think not everyone has. If you're too friendly with a player, maybe he thinks he will get preferences, and I'm not like that. I can be very friendly, and when you're doing shit, I will straight away tell you. But not everyone can cope with that. So I'm very direct and open, but I do always keep a certain distance.
Okay. All right, sir. So, it's out open out there that, you know, football management is one of the most stressful jobs you know, the fear of firing and the pressure of performance and all the stuff. I just wanted to know, from your perspective, how do you deal with stress, especially?
Very interesting question. There's one thing. By the way, if suddenly you don't hear me anymore, that means my headphone is, the battery is down. I will quickly change to the new headphone.
No problem, sir.
But we are still okay. That's one of the very interesting things. I'm a very, how would I say that? If I feel when there's stress, when there's pressure, I enjoy that. I enjoy to be a bit under pressure regarding, for instance, my wife always said, I found it unbelievable when you have interviews after a game or with media, that I really well know how to handle that. Or even when I need to do a presentation, you know, when I'm not scared. I'm not a person that is get easily scared. But when you are under pressure because of results, then my chest goes forward and I really can fight the whole world. But that's not always easy, because in the end, you want to prove when you did something right or in the right way, but you still lose, you will get more pressure. But I always have this thing, this thing inside me that even the whole world is against me, I don't care. I do what I need to do and we'll see what the outcome is. So I don't, in the beginning of the career, you will make mistakes there. Maybe you react too aggressively or whatever. But basically, that this is something that I learned over time. I always had it as a person. I'm a fighter. So that once opposition comes and wants to fight you, I don't get scared. I right away put my chest up. And so when you get under pressure because of that, or when a whole stadium would start shouting my name, like, get out of here, I would even get stronger. I would like... You understand? So I'm not really influenced by that. And I don't mean that in an arrogant way or it's just a character trait that I have.
Yeah. So exactly. So it's about your mental strength, right? So mental strength, you know, it differs from person to person. Mental strength is also, you know, is something in sports we speak a lot about, right? Even in football players. So let's say you have a team and, the players have different mental strength compared to each other. You know, it's subjective and some might take some time to, you know, grasp it or, you know, tempted to perform also, you know, that kind of pressure also affects them. So when you're managing a team, from where do you look for the aspect of mental strength? So do you constantly work on the aspect saying that, you know, for each and every player, the mental strength aspect is really important and you should, you know, reach a certain level where, you know, you are able to perform under pressure? Do you constantly work on individual players or like that? Or it depends, again, it depends from person to person and you leave it up to them to take a choice?
Let me explain.
I'm sorry, sir. If you couldn't understand the question, I'm sorry.
I understood.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
Let me look at it two ways. You have the mental strength of the team, the full team. Mm-hmm. But of course, that is built out of the individual players who have their own mental strength. Right. Now, I think some people, some players, and especially when it comes to top sports, they have it naturally. And many times you see, for instance, there are a lot of good football players or a lot of good top sport players who early in their career or when they are young, they lost a parent. You see that many times. Mm-hmm. That means... They get already in a very early age get certain responsibilities within the family and you have to deal with emotional stress, emotional setback. So it's the same thing. You see many times big sport players who come from very poor backgrounds.
Yeah.
That means on a daily basis they learn how to deal with difficult life. So automatically, you already build mental strength that you know how to deal with setback, and you need to learn how to survive. So some have it, and some you need to guide them through the whole process. But one thing is for sure: it doesn't matter how talented you are, if you don't somehow develop it or have it, you will never reach the top. Impossible. So mental strength in the end is the most important thing to reach anything in life. And that is not an easy thing. because it is very difficult to point out or to control. But I do have my ways, processes that I am project on the team and on the individual. Okay. For instance, one of the things in the teams, you saw it last year and you saw it also this year, even when our team was losing or whatever, we always, all the games, we showed fighting spirit. Yeah. And that starts with my attitude towards the players, but I also spend a lot of time on that to get that spirit and never give up and have a strong attitude.
Okay, sir. Very, very informative there. So you have spent quite some time in India managing clubs and all the stuff. From an outsider's perspective, can you sum it up where we are going wrong in terms of, you know, development of football? Just, you know, point out a few areas where we are going wrong.
First of all, I don't think you can... Look, most countries have, if you go to Europe or even South America, they have over 100 years of culture, football culture. Mm. So if you look at the ISL, it's only 6 years old. You cannot just catch up within a year, with a few years. That is one. So the culture is not there yet. And still, I think, cricket is, the cricket culture is still dominant.
Yeah, crazy.
Yes, and it is fine.
Yeah.
But the football culture still needs to grow. The second part is the infrastructure. I still think that that is very underdeveloped. Most clubs don't have a youth development, and everything starts at the youth. You can't just start at the top and expect. Let me say like this: and I gave it a few days ago. I had another interview where India has one of the highest or best development in IT. If you look at in the world, you have a highly educated IT person.
Very true, sir.
Yes. Yeah. So that means, why is that? Because also there are a lot of probably IT schools, and there's a lot of infrastructure where you can develop yourself as an IT person. So the quantity is there, but also the quality of schools and infrastructure. So with football or anything in life, it's the same. If you want to develop a good generation, they need to be educated from down, from the school they start. Mm. And in football or sport, it's the same. So if you don't have that infrastructure, that you have proper development on the bottom, on the grassroots, then you will never really grow. And if you look at the national team of India, and this is, that is obvious, all the players who are playing in the ISL, the professional players who play national team, they only play 18 games in the season. And 18 games is nothing. That is very, very small compared to all other nations, football nations. So if you really want to grow, you can divide it in those areas that I just mentioned.
Yeah. So this is not a question as such, because, you know, since I'm a big football fan and, you know, you are... I'm the sports journalism industry. So sometimes it's very difficult for us to understand that why India didn't develop, have a culture for something like, say, football, where, you know, from outside you see football is, it doesn't need much equipment as such. And, you know, where, you know, compared to cricket, you know, it's complicated. It needs so many equipment. It needs so many things. So football as such, it's a simple game, and even for us also, it's very difficult to understand why we didn't develop, a culture for such a simple game, where it's the most popular game all over the world. Take it from South America to Africa to Asia to Europe. Just discussing this thing with you, sir. There's no question.
Clear. I do think that in Indian. How I say that. For instance, India, also one thing in Indian culture, people in general, they always, I'll explain it like this. I get many, many emails from Indian people, mm-hmm. from young kids or whatever, who never played really football. And they say, coach, what should I do to become a coach? And then the understanding of that you cannot just become a coach or cannot just become a football player. So what I see many times in Indian football is that, or in Indian mentality, is nothing is a problem. We will get there. Like you said, the understanding that a game that is all famous all over the world is not something just developed over in 1 or 2 or 3 years. Yeah. And not because it's a simple game, because it's a very complex game, but you don't need too much to execute it. So there's some deeper layers behind it, that's for sure.
Yeah, sir. So you have seen, football in general, is going towards the side where there is a financial wealth. So it's tilting towards the financial wealth side, be it clubs or hosting FIFA World Cups or such things like that. So do you think the financial aspect part hasn't, came in ISL that much? And so that provides a more level playing field to ISL teams. Because I'm asking this particular reason because, Jorge Costa, who was the Mumbai City coach, he complained about, having, we didn't have that kind of budget like other teams. So expecting things out of us, it's kind of, it doesn't make sense, but we will try to do our best. Do you think the current scenario in ISL, let's say, the level playing field is quite even and, the budget aspect, the financial strong points haven't really, come into the picture yet? Or is it because you have coached the ISL side, so you think, there is an aspect of financial thing here and club have a higher budget, can do well?
Before I answer, I'm going to switch to another headphone. So give me 1 second and I will answer.
Sir,
just 1 second. Okay.
So this is the penultimate question and we have one more. So that's it, done, sir.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, sir. I can hear
you. Okay. All right. First of all, last year, you can hear me?
I can hear you, sir. Hello?
Oh, sorry. Last season, I was at the Northeast United. Northeast United is known that the budget and the total structure of the team is one of the lowest in the ISL. They don't spend too much money. Ooh. And they never qualified. So last year, my job, if you speak about budget, if you speak about reaching, achieving something, there is a relationship with money, yes, but at the same time, you also can get results even with, I never see a bag of money defeat another team. What I want to, that's a famous quote from Johan Cruyff, for instance, but what I want to say is that in the long run, if you want to be successful in the long run and if you want to win championships, you will need to invest. Okay. Because the best teams in the world are also the richest teams in the world. That's a very, very clear picture. Incidentally, there are teams who sometimes peak and were lucky one season and didn't invest too much money, but then they are not there for the long run. The next season after that or whatever, they went down again. What I want to say is that two things. You need to know your position in the market, that if you don't have too much money, then you need to be more smart in the way you recruit.
Yeah.
And but in the long run, if you really want to be effective, if you really want to compete every season, you need to have a good budget. And I will give you a perfect explanation from last season when with Northeast, who had the lowest budget of the league, we qualified. But in the end, we got Bart Okbeche and Burgess, they got injured.
Yeah, yeah.
And my squad, my team was not that deep. I didn't have a good backup. So teams who have a good budget, they have one good player for one position and they also have a second player behind him for that same position.
Okay.
And that is most of the time decided by money. But not always. There is always something where I say, have a good recruitment. And the third thing is, if you have a good youth academy, a good youth development in your club, you will always have more chance to be sustainable in the long run, because you bring in younger players who are not that expensive. So there is a relationship between all of them. But for sure, the best teams in the world, they are the richest teams. That is logic.
Right, sir. So last question. So you are from Netherlands, and you know there's a big list of influential Dutch managers who have, you know, in a way revolutionized how football is played.
Yes.
Is this a cultural thing, especially related to the country? You know, the kind of, you know, or a social thing, you know, where you view football as some sort of a creative, you know, medium, where, you know, you have to make it attractive. You have to make it a little bit different than how other countries view. Do you, as a Dutch society, think football like that, or it's again depends on individuals who, you know, who try to change it and they managed to do it?
Okay, this is a very, very interesting topic. You need to look at two things. One is the quantity of a country. So basically, if you have more people to choose from in any job, in any quality, the more chance you will have that you will find a unique top quality person.
Yeah.
If I have 10 people to choose from, or 100 people to choose from. So Holland is a very small country.
Right.
We don't have many people. We have, I think, now 17 or 18 million people. And compared to other football nations, it's a very small group of people, small quantity.
True.
But somehow, still in the history of football, we managed to bring out the good players, world-class players. So how is that possible? Then the next thing that you need to look at is the culture. There are cultural things within each country that represent the character of people. And because we are small, you want to compete with other countries on any level, you need to be more inventive. You need to be more creative. One of the things, if you look at the history of Holland, is we traveled a lot. We had, and this is not something to be proud of, but there are we had a lot of colonies in all over the world, because we went out there, we traveled, we are adventurous. Another thing, for instance, as an example only, I will give you, nothing in the world. There is no country in the world, if there's any problem that has to do with water, bridges, ships, whatever, there's only one country in the world who is really good at it, is Holland. Why? Because our country is in lowlands, we have a lot of water, so that develops certain qualities. So when it comes to football, and you want to compete, we've been always very creative and always dependent a lot on the youth development. So any club, each village has a youth development, each has a club, each has a youth development team. So you have more chances within Holland to become a football player than, for instance, when you are in England. Why? So does it make sense what I'm saying? You understand?
Yeah, it does.
Yes. So if I compare that, for instance, to Germany, Germany has the best highways in the world, has the best cars in the world, has the best engineers in the world. There is something within German culture where they always want to be the best. You can see that in the way they organize, they're very structured. But also, if you look at the quantity, they have way more people than Holland. That's why, for instance, Germany also a few times was world champion. So there's a relationship between and the quantity and the culture that a country has, and that's how I was trying to explain how was Holland always good at football, because we were always spent a lot of time. We didn't have too much money, we didn't have too much quantity, but we spent a lot of time in development, in being creative. That's basically the idea behind it.
So that was Elko Chaturi. Hope you have enjoyed listening to our conversation, and don't forget to tune in for the next edition of First Post Masterclass. Until then, stay safe and goodbye.